Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Nikias, fight on another day. But it is time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. First, a little bit of housekeeping. Steve, congratulations to your Oregon Ducks. As I tweeted in the first quarter of that football game after yet another mind-boggling touchdown allowed, I'm very ready for the season to be over with. So congrats to you on a well-played game for Oregon. Also, some housekeeping for us, because I just realized I just never said the thing. Naturally, if you are new to us on JJ Redick's YouTube channel, we are here every Tuesday. I should have noted that this is not the only time that we record. We do go twice a week. Our episodes on YouTube are on Tuesdays, but we do have an audio version that drops every Thursday. So if you do like what we do, like what you hear from us, you want to get more of us, subscribe. We're on Apple, Spotify, Google, all that good stuff. But we do go twice a week, audio and video on Tuesdays, audio only on Thursdays. So I figured I would sprinkle that in just to let you know how we do things and where we're going to be at. Okay, let's get into some of these news items before hopping into the deeper hoops talk. Andre Iguodala named acting executive director of the Players Association, taking over for Tamika Tremaglio. This one caught me off guard. Andre Iguodala, based on the acumen, also just based on his experience in general, like, seems very fitting to fill this role for however long he needs to. But the timing kind of surprised me. It's just something that I didn't expect. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Nope. Salute to Iggy.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. For the Denver Nuggets, they agreed to a contract extension with championship-winning head coach Michael Malone. Per Mike Singer, that's going to be a two-year extension in addition to the 2 years that he already has left. So that should take him through the 2026-27 season. Pretty dull analysis here, but that seems well-deserved. With the tenure that he's had in Denver, a lot of winning, which highlighted by the championship win last year, helped establish a culture there. The defense continues to look pretty darn good for Denver, and we saw how big the defense was during the championship run last year. This just seems like handshakes and hand claps all around.
Very well deserved. I'm happy for Coach Michael Malone to just have some security. It felt like he was on the hot seat for way too long, way longer than he should have been. So for him to be able to take care of business, get a ring, stick around, two thumbs up there. Did you want to be respectfully messy, Nikias?
Yes, I want to be both respectfully messy and a little bit shameless. On the respectfully messy front, do we happen to know what the last year of Nikola Jokic's contract is?
I do not off the top of my head. What is it?
Last full year is 2026-27. He has a player option for the following year. So I guess we will... We will see how that goes. As for the shameless portion of the program, Steve and I were privileged to talk to Coach Michael Malone and some other head coaches for the Coach's Corner series on the NBA app. So if you want to watch Coach Michael Malone talk through some film, we asked some questions as well. That was fun. Check it out on the NBA app. There you go. On the injury note, before we get into the injuries, quick hat tip to Skylar Mays in Portland, getting converted to a standard contract, 7 points and 4 assists in about 17 minutes per game so far for Portland. That dude just does not make mistakes with the ball in his hands. The jumper remains a question mark. He does compete defensively still. I'm happy for him. Like, he had some fun flashes in Atlanta when he was a member of that team, and now seeing him get the standard contract in Portland, he's really filled in admirably as they've had some guard injuries. So just wanted to give a quick hat tip there to Skylar Mays. Did you have Skylar Mays thoughts, Steve?
No.
Okay, fair enough. I will take on the mantle then. On a more somber note, Kelly Oubre out indefinitely after being struck by a car. When we talk about shocking news, that is certainly something that no one had on the bingo card. So first and foremost, that's terrifying. And I hope that the recovery goes as smoothly and as quickly as possible. All of the prayers and well wishes, whichever verbiage you prefer, I hope Kelly is okay. Beyond, I guess, on the roster note, do you see Philly doing anything? Or is this just a waited out CB gets healthy? By doing anything, I mean trying to add someone on the free agent market. It doesn't have to be like a big trade or something.
I would say wait it out. Okay. Prayers up again to him, but I would think they just roll with their roster. Integrate their new guys and keep rolling.
Gotcha. Tap into the wing room just a little bit more. The team did say he has a fractured rib, among other things, and they're going to reevaluate him in a week. So we will see what the progress looks like. And Oubre, aside from this just being terrifying, it's also unfortunate within the basketball context because he was playing very, very well, averaging over 16 points per game, a career high 58% on twos, 38% on threes on nearly five attempts per game, really sliding into what Philadelphia was doing offensively. So again, I hope Kelly Oubre gets well soon. Tyler Hero suffered an ankle injury last week. He's going to be reevaluated in 2 weeks. Duncan Robinson currently starting in his place, and boy, is he playing well. Cam Thomas also dealing with an ankle injury. He's going to be out for a couple of weeks, so we'll see what Mikal Bridges does with even more usage, how they kind of sort that out. Nick Claxton is back, so that's going to be fun watching the Brooklyn Nets integrate new guys and just do what Cam Thomas is doing. That man has been scoring all over the place. DeLon Wright also out, a right MCL sprain, out 4 to 6 weeks. So that concludes your, I guess, brief adjacent injury report.
Let's turn injuries off so we don't have to do this every single week.
I don't like that. Let's talk some actual basketball now. Steve, what team has caught your eye as of late?
I want to talk about the Dallas Mavericks.
Okay.
4-1 at home, 4-1 on the road. Now they are 6-1 against teams that are below 500 right now, I believe. But I am sure that Mavericks fans will just take them taking care of business at the moment. The thing I want to talk about, Nikias, the starting lineup of Luka, Kyrie, Grant Williams, Derrick Jones Jr., and Derek Lively, 5-1. And when you look at that starting lineup, that's when you start to understand the vision of Dallas and what they're trying to build and how they're trying to get it back together. Last year, they fell short defensively, trying to mix Luka and Kyrie in together, trying to get back closer to the base from 2 years ago, but they're hitting it in different ways. So you look at a game where they play the Pelicans, and you have Grant Williams guarding Zion. You have Derrick Jones Jr. on Brandon Ingram. You can insulate your stars that way defensively. And then on the other end, Derrick Jones, Grant Williams, hey, here's your role. You guys defend. You guys space the floor. Go ahead and set some screens. Knock down some open shots. Pretty simple, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, Derek Lively, go ahead and protect the paint. Play some drop. Mix in some switches. Screen, roll, rebound. Pretty simple, right? And what they've done, Luka, Kyrie, go do the offensive stuff. go do all of the offensive stuff. All of the offensive stuff you want to do, go ahead and get it done. Plenty of space to get it done, and they're taking advantage of it right now. I think they averaged 55.6 of Dallas's 124 points per game, and they averaged 15.3 of their 25.4 assists. But it does feel more natural this year than it did last year when they were trying to integrate them, which I think is a very funny point. I'm going to go to the left real quick.
Okay.
It's a little ironic. We have teams like Minnesota and Dallas having the starts that they're having based on how people felt that their big swings went last year. And we have the teams that have made the swings this year having the starts that they're having. Just wanted to throw that out there. But going back to that lineup, Grant Williams, Derrick Jones Jr., I'm sure shooting concerns would be a thing, right?
Correct, yes.
I will state, Derrick Jones Jr., shooting a career high 36.6% from three. Last year, he shot 83s for the whole season. He's already at 41. Last year, he made 27. He's already made 15. And Grant Williams is shooting 50% from three. Now, 54 of his 76 field goal attempts are three-pointers, so clearly he knows the assignment. But you have to remember, in the context of Dallas's offense, because of the type of pressure that Luka is going to put on defenses, because of the fact that defenses are going to double, show help, or be in rotation at some point, they're going to be open. And they're going to be facing closeouts for most of the regular season. So that's a role that they could probably fill and feel comfortable with. I do like, when I watch Dallas, I feel like whenever there's a stretch of like 2 to 3 misses, here comes Tim Hardaway Jr. And now, whether it's Luka in the post or Luka in pick and roll, sure, you can still double off Derrick Jones Jr. or you can give him a stunt. Look at who that extra pass is going to. So they're able to have shooting like that. And I think having those two allows Kyrie to just kind of fill the gaps, run in transition, push in transition, make sudden attacks. His actions just feel a little bit quicker this year than they did last year when it was just kind of trying to move it around. Did you have any thoughts about their starting lineup?
Yeah, like it's been interesting for me to watch just because, to your point, like I did have questions about, they're starting Jared Jones Jr. I understand why you would do that defensively. Offensively, can he get enough? Can you get enough out of him as a roller? Like, I think he can slip screens and we know how high he can jump. But if it just turns into a switch and you're able to get a body on him, what is the utility? Do you just keep him in the dunker spot? Do you peter him out to the corner? If so, teams are going to give those shots up. What is that going to look like? So right now they're holding serve. I do want to continue to keep my eye on it. I was quickly pulling up some stats, checking out PvP stats right now. The starting lineup for Dallas is pretty much neutral right now. And as a unit, they are shooting about 32.5% from three right now. And so there is room for upside there. As you mentioned, Derrick Jones Jr. shooting relatively well, Grant Williams shooting well, Kyrie and Luka, we know they can make shots. With this particular five-man pairing, the three-point shooting hasn't been there, but there is some very obvious upside with that group. And as those shots start to fall more, particularly with the stars in that group, if the defense is going to be this, which I think 113 defensive rating, it put them around like 17th, 18th league-wide, if you extrapolate, right? You look at what the Dallas formula should be, you think you got Luka, you got Kyrie, that's elite offense. We just need the defense to be to a certain level. If you're telling me the starting lineup is going to defend at basically average-ish rate, they're 17th, 18th, and the shot-making should perk up, it seems to be heading in the right direction. So I'm with you that it seems you can see what the blueprint is for this group. The other part of the Derrick Jones Jr. thing is, and I guess I flip this to you as a question. Where does that put Josh Green for you? Because it does feel like he's been a little bit uneven this year, and I don't know how much of that is just sometimes players have cold starts, or if it's something like system-wise or who he's playing alongside that may be leading to some of the hesitancy that we're seeing from him.
It's a good question. My thing with Josh Green is he plays well enough to start until he starts. And that is more of a gut eye feeling than anything statistically. But it feels like he plays his way into that first unit. And then once he gets to that first unit, he stops doing the things that got him there. And now defense is just helping off of him. Like he had a stretch last year where he was aggressive. He said, never again. We're not doing this again. He's able to still find some of that athleticism, the rolling, the driving. I just think he has more room with the second unit, especially when you look at the staggering, where the first subs are still going to play with Luka. And with Luka, it's going to be pick and roll, and they're doing more post-ups for him. And so it's going to be a little bit more stagnant, a little bit more teams are doubling or he's scoring, a little bit more quick decisions, and that's it. I think when he's playing with Kyrie in that second unit with Dante Exum, okay, I can be used as a screener here. I can run in transition, get rewarded. There's more opportunity for me to do different things than just purely be in this context. I think overall that helps him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I got you. And then just very quickly to bounce off of the, you know, insulating your stars defensively number, I was looking at some Luka stuff because it felt, and something that we've commented before early in the season, like the defensive effort seems better. This is back to what, you know, the year before last was when Dallas was surprisingly a top 10 defense. Like this is, you just have to have a basic, you just have to have like an out, a baseline of defensive effort. Do your job. Luka is 6'7 and strong. So like just try and you should be okay. So far this season, as a recording, we record on Monday afternoons, he's defended the most ISOs in the league this year, 46. On those possessions in which the team tries to attack Luka in isolation, they are generating 0.83 points per possession, which is an elite number defensively. And if you filter that for just direct play, so the guy who's attacking Luka shoots or passes it to somebody who immediately shoots, 0.88 points per possession, which is also an elite mark. That's not me saying Luka should make all defense, but he's not hurting you right now. So just want to sprinkle that in there.
One, that's a heck of a stat. Two, I love that you immediately clean that up. So there'd be no allegations against Nekias Duncan at all.
We're not doing that. I'm just saying teams have tried to put him in action, and to this point, it has not worked yet.
It's a great stat. It's a good point. It's something I wanted to point on with their defense. They are way more willing to throw switches out there this year. Like typically when you think of Dallas, that's a defense that's based on activity, but they have this weird functionality defensively, like this weird switchability that kind of works. Mm-hmm. Like I think there was a possession in the Pelicans game. Pelicans were bringing up a transition. Luka just like swung at the ball real quick, just swiped at it. He's out of the play. But then Lively took his drive. Luka just kind of flowed to Jonas Valanciunas. On the kickout, they switched back, and I was like, oh, y'all just doing this. And now you see Kyrie switched on to Brandon Ingram, Lively showing help. It's not an automatic double. It just kind of feels like the goal for them is to stay at home more. And they're not afraid to put Luka or Kyrie on certain guys and just kind of play out of it behind it. Their biggest issue defensively remains when they give up drives and when they have to rotate. They have not nailed that portion of the program. And so you can see why they may have wanted to switch and stay at home because, you know, once you get to one drive, one kick, a second drive, that help is not sustained. The multiple efforts are not there. So that's something I keep an eye on, but it's been a good start for Dallas.
Been a good start indeed. And then just to bounce off of the drive point, when they're scrambling like that, it hurts the rebounding. They are currently 28th in defensive rebound rate. So even if you get the stop, you still have to be able to end possession so you can get out in transition and push more and get to the early offense and let Luka or Kyrie cook. So got to see a little bit better from there, but that's a good point. That's good stuff. Did you have any more Dallas thoughts?
No, let's go blast off.
Are you proud of that one?
Yes.
Okay, well, okay, I'll let you have it then. Anyway, well, we are going to remain in Texas. The team that I wanted to bring up are the Houston Rockets, 6-3 right now. Winners of six straight. It has been a home-heavy schedule. We'll toss the caveat out there. But this is a team that knows what it wants to do. And as simplistic as that sounds on the surface, it is such a shift from what we saw for large portions of last season, where it felt like a lack of direction on both ends of the floor. You add these veterans in, you get a new coaching staff, and it is very firm. Offensively, we are playing through Şengün. We're going to flow from there. If we're running pick and rolls, you got two dribbles max. Explore it if you see something. If you do not, get off of it. Let's move. And again, like, that's nothing super fancy, but you don't need fancy when you have this kind of talent, you have this kind of know-how in the building. And then defensively, I've been so impressed with the activity. I've been so impressed with just the general physicality. Like, I think going before even getting into any of the scheme stuff with Houston, this is a team that makes you feel them. Like, it is fun watching them just bump guys off the ball. Peel in to help early. If someone tries to roll, you're feeling the body. They go into subs. Here comes Aaron Holiday pressing you 70 feet from the basket. And it's just like, it's just 48 minutes of, we are here. You may score because you run this good action. You may score because you may have a specific mismatch somewhere, but it's not going to be easy. We are going to make you work for anything. And again, as simple as that sounds, it's such a breath of fresh air watching this group on both ends. Then you get into these individual players. Alperen Şengün has been phenomenal to start this season. He is one of three players in the league right now averaging at least 19, 8, and 6. The other two players, you may have heard of them, Luka and Jokic. I think they're pretty good. Of those three players, Şengün has the lowest turnover rate of those three. So you are seeing him used more as a hub, both in the post, elbow, above the break when they go into some of their delay stuff. He's not making many mistakes with the ball. And do you think about the experimentation with the jumper has been fun. He's been one of the most efficient mid-range scorers in the league. The one-legged jumper has just been, is making me cackle, but it's also just going in all of the time. So that's been cool. And I think since his rookie year, we've been talking about the footwork that dude has on the post, on the block, rather. To where if he has a mismatch he feels like he can abuse, he will just lower the shoulder and get into you. If you're a little bit bigger, he'll go into all these fakes and pivots and pump fakes. He can finish with either hand. It's been a lot of fun. And if you cut, he will find you in a variety of ways. So I'm glad that he has seen more usage offensively, just in terms of volume, but also the way they move him around has been a lot of fun to watch. And I think that's helped simplify things for Jalen Green when they operate with each other. Having Fred VanVleet, who is used to operating with like a big man hub. Fred VanVleet can boogie around handoffs. He can flow into pick and rolls, get into pull-ups. He's once again doing the thing where he's making a bunch of threes, but inside the arc, he gets a little funky. But like watching the Denver game goes back to being simple, taking the simple play. Oh, Jokic is in a drop this time. I'm just going to flow right into this pull-up from three or from two. You're not worrying about the aimless possessions with Houston as much as you were last year. So like, I appreciate what Şengün is doing, what Fred VanVleet is doing offensively, just adding a level of simplicity to it. I think that's been helpful. And then defensively, Fred remains pretty nasty at the point of attack. I've enjoyed his work as a helper, as I always do when he's healthy. And I think what's kind of stood out for me with Houston scheme-wise is that, yeah, they want to have their help peeled in, but that help is coming pretty high. Like, they are very firm on, we want someone at the nail. Whatever you want to do. We want someone parked at the nail. We trust that Fred can get to the nail, disrupt you, and then get back out to his guy. Dylan Brooks, if you're at the nail, we trust that you can disrupt this drive or this role, get back out to your guy. And it's been kind of funny to watch Dylan Brooks in particular when he's operating at the nail because he's good at it. But it feels like he kind of free roams sometimes. Like I was watching one of the Kings games from last week. And like he's defending Kevin Huerter, which makes sense. Kevin Huerter, very good shooter. Will cut all over the place, can flow on the handoffs, et cetera, et cetera. And like they would station Kevin Huerter one pass away from Sabonis whenever he was trying to post up or whatever. And here comes Dylan Brooks creeping over or just kind of trying to time some late doubles. It's like, hey, man, I feel you because that's your job and you're good at it. That's Kevin Huerter, though. I don't know if you want to do that. And like it made me think this morning as I was like cooking breakfast, like I wonder if there's some kind of conversation had with Dylan Brooks, who one's playing very well. He's only averaging 8.7 shot attempts per game this year. I wonder if there was a conversation like, hey, I know that you are a competitor. I know that you are in prove it mode. I've seen your comments about the way that you can score when given the opportunity, et cetera. How about I will give you more freedom defensively than we probably really want. We want this to be firm, but I'll let you roam around a little bit defensively if you promise to reel it in a little bit offensively. Pick your spots more there because we really need to clean that part up. But we know what you can do on ball defensively. Off ball, we'll let you roam a little bit. Just chill. And so maybe that's part of the, I'm only like 8% series. Like I want, that feels like a trade-off that has worked in the 8% chance that that's actually a thing. Because it has been a little bit wild off ball, but on the ball, good luck moving the dude. Good luck shaking the dude. And he just ultimately sets a tone. Like I think about the Lakers game where LeBron got him and then the second time he didn't get him and then he's just yelling into the crowd because he's hyped over a turnover. It's like, this is the Dylan Brooks experience. And so that portion's been fun. The Jabari Smith Jr. usage offensively feels better. I am still waiting on like the productivity slash efficiency to come around. Jalen Green was super efficient until the Denver game, which just threw off all of my notes. So thanks, Jalen. But in all seriousness,
give me the numbers.
Man, I was so, we can go with the brief aside. I was so hyped to bring up the Jalen Green efficiency. I was like, dog, he is flirting with a 60 true shooting percentage. This is great. Dribbles per touch is down. Touch time is down. He's being more decisive. The pacing feels better on the ball. Like all those things are true. And I was just going to hammer the point home with guess where he is with true shooting percentage. And then he goes 1-for-13 against Houston. I mean, against Denver. It's like, gosh, darn it.
As we're on the brief aside, you can still feel all those things. You just might not have the cherry on top. What's the stat? Just want to throw it out there. Hey, you out there. If your stats and your analytics and your film only confirms your opinion, your analysis is going to smell stinky at some point. Anyways, continue, bud.
It's a good note. Also a tweet that you can see, Steve Jones 20. But anyway, but no, like the process still remains the process. And like the Denver, even with the Denver game, and I would like to talk a little bit about that game because I was very excited to, didn't watch it live, I watched it earlier today. I was very excited to see this one. I was like, okay, I'm starting to see like the tweets and the murmuring. Like, yeah, Houston winning, but they at home. They ain't really playing nobody, et cetera, et cetera. I circled the Denver game. Because one, Denver's really good. Two, Denver with their personnel, even without Jamal Murray, they can pick at the very specific weaknesses that you may be able to point to with this Houston team. Şengün, how does he deal with bigger centers? Well, now you got Jokic. Jalen Green, you get lost off ball a little bit. Well, yeah, but now you're either chasing Michael Porter Jr. or you're chasing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope around all these cuts and these handoffs. Let's see what you can do. Denver going to sprinkle in some 5-4 pick and roll. All right, Jabari, we know you're switchable. How do you deal with centers? They just had the room to poke at all those things. What do we get? A Houston win, and Denver had an 89.1 offensive rating in the half court in that game. They did miss some shots, but those guys competed. They didn't send a ton of help towards Jokic on those post-ups. Jokic got him. We saw what the Jokic stat line was in that game. But pull up the defensive film for Houston in that game. It just feels so different. It just feels so different with this team. And while I'm on Houston, Jayshon Tate making winning plays, that's been fun. Jeff Green continuing to be a productive role player. Houston now having to shift to more of like Jeff Green at the five, those type units, which speaks to the optionality since Tari Eason is back, but also kind of highlights the fact that the Jock Landale signing hasn't been a particularly good one to this point of the season. There's still obvious time. But that hasn't been super fruitful right now. But it is nice that you have all these 6'8", 6'9", 6'10 dudes you can sprinkle in and say, okay, cool, we're just going to switch everything now. Let's throw Tari out there, Jabari out there, Jeff Green. Let's simplify all of this. And if you have Fred Van Vliet, there was a lineup they had Fred Van Vliet and Aaron Holiday on the floor together. It's like, okay, now we're going to hound you at the point of attack. And Fred's more switchable for a guy his size. We got these two or three dudes that can switch all over the place. Have fun. Have fun. So I say all of that to say this Houston team has been a joy to watch so far this year. We will see where their record lands as it gets tougher, as they hit like extended road trips and stuff like that. Hard to argue with fourth and half court offense, fourth and half court defense right now. Like that's been pretty solid for them. I've just enjoyed watching them play so far.
Yes, the Houston Rockets have transformed by the revolutionary formula of moving the basketball, playing together, and trying hard on defense.
Who would have thought?
Huh. It's almost like those are the things that we said they needed to do. Anyway, sarcasm aside, I give them credit for their response. They did start the season losing at Orlando and at Spurs. And it looked like not only were they going to be in the same tier, they might be behind some of those teams. They fought back. They responded. Not a ton of meat left on the bone, but I want to bounce off a couple things you said. The early help they show is key. And that's where the impact of Brooks and Van Vliet really stands out. They're really good at being in the right position, getting out, help recover. They're physical against cutters, show that against Denver, and they're building trust defensively. So even when there's a breakdown, they know there's help behind them, as opposed to prior years where, oh, it's a breakdown. Darn, I messed up. Oops, it's a layup. All right, let's go score. And so I think the fact that they've been able to compete like that night after night, Şengün's effort's been consistent. They have that trust defensively. And then offensively, it's their balance for me. When you have five guys averaging double figures, four guys averaging double-digit field goal attempts, and Dylan Brooks is at the bottom, shooting 55%, something is positive there. You mentioned the versatility. It's not just Fred VanVleet bringing it up every single time. Green, Smith, Brooks, even Şengün can push it. Now they can flow into something. I think they're flowing into things a lot better. I think Jalen Green's making quicker decisions. Him off ball has been fun. Get him in some movement. Let him get downhill. I think Fred VanVleet is just steady, just really steady. And he knows when I need to go shoot this pull-up and when I need to make sure we run something. And that's a dynamic Houston hasn't had before. Brooks and Jabari have been the right levels of aggressive. And I love that you mentioned the versatility because we can throw different lineups out here. When you look up against Denver and you have Holiday and Fred VanVleet with Dylan Brooks and Jason Tate, I'm like, whoa, this is some chaos defensively. Because we got two guys just pressuring the heck out of the ball and two other guys who can do that, but they're taller. Now, I'm not going to rain on the parade.
Uh-oh.
But we're going to get some answers about the Rockets. Because this is the one thing I will always tell y'all. It's hard to keep surprising the league. And now they get to go on the road. A few days of prep for it. At the Clippers, who need a win. At the Lakers, who need a win. At the Warriors, who probably would like to win at home.
Yeah, Warriors just quietly on a losing streak right now. I got some more thoughts on them a little bit later. Go ahead.
You come back home for two more, Memphis and Denver, and you go back on the road, face Dallas, Denver, and the Lakers. So now it's going to be how do you respond if teams are more prepared for what you're doing defensively? If they're ready for your early help and they kick out? If they're ready to be physical against you offensively? So that'll be the growth for the Rockets for me. But very good stuff.
Very good stuff indeed. Just quick note, because I said want to see the productivity and efficiency perk up for Jabari. I should note, it is way up from what it was last year. I just want to see a little bit more with the quality of looks that he's getting. He's up to 36% from three, which, again, big jump from where it was last year. So I just want to make sure I clean that up. Not saying he's been inefficient, but there's room. There's meat left on the bone, to take Steve's phrase. So sprinkle that in. As for the Jalen Green efficiency, again, just the pull-ups weren't falling. You want to see the drives be a little bit more productive, but he is shooting 40% from three this year, over six free throw attempts per game so far this year, career high in free throw rate by a mile. So that's been fun. That is kind of the byproduct of him being off the ball more and getting his little tech tilted defenses a little bit more. So that's been fun. I love the utilization of him there. It's just nice seeing this from this group because there's this talent. There was talent on the roster last year. It just did not play together did not come together for a myriad of reasons. So it's nice to see this kind of productivity on both ends of the ball for this Houston group. We'll leave it there. Normally on this podcast, it is, hey, who are some teams that we're thinking about, and kind of flow from there. But in this case, I think it's fair we just have a conversation about the Clippers, who have not gotten off to the best start during the James Harden era. They are 0-4 right now. A loss to the Knicks, a loss to the Nets, a loss to the Mavericks, in which, why does Luka keep doing this to the Los Angeles Clippers? And then a loss to the Memphis Grizzlies in James Harden's home debut with the Los Angeles Clippers. So 0-4, a 107 offensive rating, a near 119 defensive rating. We'll note that the half-court defense is very good for the Clippers so far during the Harden era. The transition defense and the transition offense, for that matter, has not been. 27th in transition offense and transition defense, 24th in half-court offense. It's been tough. Steve, what have been some of your early observations?
I got a lot. So are you sure you want to go to me? And I'll just say, if you are watching on YouTube, thank you. Tuesdays for the Dunkers. Buckle up, because we're about to do the thing. If you've been a longtime Dunker, you know exactly where we're going with this. So, you know, just grab your water and enjoy your time. Are you sure you want me to go first? Because I believe you may not be out on the Clippers, but you have definitely texted someone else in the last 2 weeks.
That's crazy. Hey, just checking in. Want to see how you're doing. That's a wild shot. But no, I want you to go first. I will just quickly say, in four games in which not only is this the Harden debut with the Clippers, this is just his season debut. There was no real training camp for him, per the reports. There was no preseason for him, as was clear with him not playing any of the Sixers games. So this is just the start for James Harden. And so with that very obvious context, and now you throw in like the Mason Plumlee injury that's going to mess with the rotation in terms of the front court and the pairings that you can have there. And just the natural, this is a new team. I do believe like it's too early to just say, okay, this just ain't going to work. It's fair to have some questions, though. I think it's fair for us to dig into like what we've seen so far. So with that, and I have a little bit more, but with that, I will let you go.
Let's dig into it, because I feel like there's a lot of the what going on with the Clippers and not a lot of talk about the why or the how or the where are they going. So let's try and figure that out. Because if you put the numbers up, it doesn't look great. And the most important stat is they haven't won a game. You put those two together, that sandwich does not taste great. I'm going to start with a bigger picture thought, Nikias.
Okay.
We could probably agree James Harden to the Clippers was to elevate their ceiling, right? Mm-hmm. We could probably agree James Harden to the Clippers did not address some of their issues, right? Mm-hmm. So now I'm at a point, just looking at this sample size that we have, they're trying to figure out how to make this work with James Harden, while also trying to figure out how to make it work, period, to a degree. Mm-hmm. Some of the issues that they have could have been made stronger by his arrival and having to figure it out. Some of these things are things we've talked about before. And so when I look back, when you talk about the Clippers, for as long as everyone has said they need a point guard, they have needed to have movement in the half court, and they have needed to have better tempo. And that has not changed. And James Harden, no James Harden, if that doesn't change, they're going to be in the same boat. And you look at where the Clippers have tried different things. For instance, I think we've seen it in almost every game they played. James Harden catches at the elbow. Paul George cuts off Zubac. And now we can just play out of it. Paul George can cut back off Zubac, get a catch. He can go all the way. Kawhi can come off option screens, so he can either cut off PG to the post or cut off Zubac to the top. Zubac can go into pick roll with Harden. All of that sounds fantastic on paper, right? Mm-hmm. A little fun, a little optionality, use our talent together. If it takes 14 seconds for it to happen, how much fun are we having?
Not a lot.
Now, take that 14 seconds that it takes to get into that singular action. Let's add Marcus Smart in the Memphis game saying, oh, this what y'all doing? Let me tilt this way and I will switch all of this. Bye-bye. Now you're up against the clock. I go back to that first Knicks game, Nikias. Ty Lue calls quick. For any of y'all out there, quick, usually a call for a wide pin down. James Harden's not in play. He's on the weak side. just a wide pin down, folks. Took 10 seconds to get into it. Go back, listen to the tape. Go watch the Knicks feed, put your headphones on, and you will hear the difference between when Ty Lue said it and when they actually started moving. They can't be that. They can't be that slow.
I'm going to quickly raise my hand. Are you saying that the play call should be called slow?
All right. All right. Now, we have seen how he can help them in pick and roll. We don't have a ton of results for it. Who do you point at there? Do we go with Harden? Is he being too passive? Is he not being aggressive? Are they running too many pick and rolls? Where do we go there? Because you have those moments where Paul George is in the weak side corner. Do him and Zubac have the chemistry right yet? Like, I know everyone made the system player jokes, but literally last year, James Harden, hey, Joel, come here, bud. One dribble, bop, pocket pass. Little different with Zoo. If you penetrate too much, it's not like the lob is going to be there. And he might not be ready for the pocket pass. So you have some of those possessions mixed in. Mm-hmm. You have a really nice action in the Memphis game, Nikias. They run a Harden Zubac pick and roll. Paul George comes off a baseline screen on the left side from Russell Westbrook. Kawhi is in the right side on the weak side. This is what you want design-wise. This looks great. You know what happened? Zubac ain't made the layup. This is where my point is, and I have more, but it's like there are flashes of what could work here. There are no results to tell people that this is going to work. Where do I meet you in the middle here?
And this is where they just, again, I'm sorry for the boring analysis here, but this is where they just need more time to figure some of this stuff out. Because as you said, like, you can see some of the design. And in terms of like the tempo stuff, funny, I looked this up a little bit earlier. I was like, okay, how quick are these possessions ending for the Clippers? Which isn't a one-to-one comparison with how much pace they're running the actions with. So that's very obvious. But I was like, okay, let me see what this is. Because it does feel like some of these possessions lag along. So before the Harden trade, they were 22nd in seconds per possession, about 14 and a half. Since the Harden trade, 14.1. That's 13th in that span. But then you think about the type of shots that are being taken a little bit earlier. It's like, okay, this doesn't breed confidence. Like, this isn't great. It feels like one action that may take a little bit to get into, and then, oh, what was my time to shoot? It's the Paul George pin down. Gets the catch. Ah, nothing's really happened on their weak side. And we tried to, like, do a little exchange or something. All right, I'll take it. And so you're technically getting a quicker possession, but in terms of the progression of what they're trying to run, the fluidity isn't there yet. The fact that they are trying these things is a good thing. But, like, I go back to what you said at the beginning, to where, like, some of these questions have been there before this trade. As you mentioned, like, you know, running it through Harden at the elbow. Like, we've been talking about the Clippers being switches since the team was constructed with Kawhi and PG. And so, yeah, if you're running with poor tempo, you're also facing Marcus Smart, who's willing to switch onto literally anyone. Yeah, that might be a bit problematic for you. And then you add in the fact that Paul George is still very good. He's not literally setting the net on fire like he was the first 2 weeks of the season. The result's going to feel a little bit different. Russell Westbrook, depending on where he's stationed, we don't know what the rim pressure is going to be like for him right now. James Harden just flat out hasn't been able to get to the rim like that in four games, which, again, I will remind you, this is literally the start of his season campaign, these four games. So, yeah, whatever burst questions you had heading into the season, forget the Harden-Morey stuff, whatever, whatever. Whatever burst questions you have for Harden, it is absolutely going to be magnified until, like, at least December 1st. Because he is quite literally trying to get himself into game shape right now. You add all that together, and very quietly, as good as Kawhi still is, his burst hasn't really looked the same either. Like, he's still Kawhi, and he can knock down mid-range jumpers whenever he wants to. He can knock down threes whenever he decides to take them off the catch. But in terms of, all right, I will just bully you, nudge you in the shoulder, get a step and get you on the hip versus just having to bully all the time, quiet as kept, that hasn't been the same either. And so you add all of that, like, yeah, it's not going to look great right now. I will say on the Harden pick and roll front, like, I was making the joke with you during our watch party yesterday when he was running pick and roll with Kawhi. I was like, huh, is Kawhi just going to be Embiid for him? As the guy, he's comfortable like getting the pocket pass, and now Kawhi can operate in the mid-range. Because to your Zubac point, which, funny enough, the pick and rolls between Harden and Zubac have been productive. 1.17 points per possession on trips featuring a Harden-Zubac pick and roll. That's really good. And that's with trying to figure out the chemistry of when to throw the pass, Zubac's hands with the pass, trying to figure out the spacing to open up, roll for Zubac to go into, some of the finishing stuff that perks up with him. So the fact that it's this good, and the fact that Harden at least looks comfortable taking those mid-range pull-ups when he sees drop, like, that's a positive sign, and that should be able to build out. My question then goes beyond him. Okay, what if Harden Kawhi just becomes a switch now instead of some of the roles that we saw from Kawhi in that Memphis game? What does that look like? We just flat out haven't seen Harden and PG used together in that way. That's probably going to be a switch. Looking at second spectrum, Russell Westbrook has set a whopping 2 on-ball screens for James Harden so far. What is that going to look like? And now with Mason Plumlee being out, backup 5 is probably going to be PJ Tucker, right?
Don't sleep on Diabate.
That's true. Musa can scoot. But like, even with that, what if that turns into, can scoot for like a forward slash big? But even then, if that turns into a switch, are you just adding a layer to the switch problem? And I hope if it does, again, it's too early. I've said 18 times at this point. It's 4 games in. But if we do get to December, January, and that ends up being the bit, I hope the conversation becomes, wow, the Clippers haven't solved switching. And not, this Harden trade sucked, Harden's bad, you know, toxic superstar, et cetera. Now, like, I don't now, want it to be
Nekias, you bad. You know what the verse is going to be. You know what, you don't have to call Murphy Lee. You know what the hook is going to be, bud.
No, you didn't.
I sure did.
Cash started.
But I want to bounce off what you said there. Because they have tried some fun things with their personnel. Whether it's Westbrook as a screener, you mentioned Kawhi screening for Harden. They've had Harden screen for Kawhi too. Mm-hmm. I have thoughts because it's a good thing that they're doing it. Will it always be a switch point? I think there's always going to be a person on the court that you don't want to guard Kawhi Leonard. And if you're going the point guard bothers James Harden with ball pressure route, you may not want that person, or that may not just be an automatic switch for you. The thing in my head, if I go back to the Nets game, they came out of a timeout once, and Paul George just kind of did like a slip with James Harden, and the Nets, who are a switch team, just didn't switch it. He got downhill and made a play. But my problem with this, and even when they've inverted it, like, Harden set some off-ball screens for Kawhi early, set a couple on-ball screens against the Knicks. Here's the issue for the Clippers. It does not matter who it is, whether it's Harden, Kawhi, Russ, Paul George. We're getting to the point where these have to be actual screens. We can like the idea of using these guys as screeners because that fits into what the Clippers like to do as far as attacking mismatches and forcing you to show help. Now Kawhi gets a double. We play out of that. That's great. If there is no screen, if there is no tempo behind it, defenses are going to be able to navigate it. And now you don't have a pressure point. And now you're in the same boat you were when you started the set. And now that gets you further away from the positives that you've had when you have quick decisions, when you have quick attacks. You have to be able to get to that. And then you have to advance to the phase where you're keeping your advantage as an offense. It's great to get a team in rotation. If it's drive, kick, pass, swing, they recover, what have you accomplished? And now you mix in the possessions where your best ball movement, and this is no disrespect, ends up in Russell Westbrook's hands. Not by design. He just literally is there. That's just the next natural pass. And it's like, oh, well, like they have to navigate all that. Because it's cool to do double drag with Powell and Zubac's screeners and PG and Zubac's screeners and Russ's Zubac's screeners. Functionality wise, what do you do after it?
Mm-hmm. So like 2 things on that, right? One, is just the screening thing. Is this just like an LA problem right now? Cause like the Lakers, it feels like they're having the same thing. We're like, oh, we're supposed to screen here. We're just gonna get in the way.
Yeah.
And
see what happens.
And then the set just dies. So that's one. Number 2, to the ball ends up in Russ's hands point. it's unfortunate because I feel like Russ is doing mostly everything he's supposed to. And it just kind of boils down to, oh, well, if Russ is taking the three, the defense is probably okay with it, regardless if it goes in or not, which is unfortunate. Secondarily, though, the fact that Russ is ending up with some of these is an indictment of, like, Kawhi and Harden passing up some of these catch-and-shoot opportunities that they're getting. And I'm not trying to press that button too often. But even four games in, it's like, dude, you have this star talent to create advantages. And then you have this other star talent to capitalize on the advantage that's been created. I do not care how good of a shooter James Harden is if he's just going to pump fake himself out of a wide open catch and shoot jumper. I do not care how good of a shooter Kawhi Leonard is if he's going to catch and hold and then drive into a mid-range jumper. If you have the advantage, you got to capitalize on it. Like, that's the literal reason, into your beginning point about bringing James Harden in to lift your ceiling. This is why you bring this much talent together. In theory, we got three or four dudes that are good enough offensive players to draw a second defender. If not directly to the ball, we're gonna force that help to creep in early, and then we can do something behind that help. And then depending on who starts that, especially if it's Russ in particular, if he's able to get ahead of steam, I can kick out to Paul George. He's one of the best three-point shooters ever. I'd kick out the Kawhi Leonard, who's a great three-point shooter and is one of the best developmental stories in terms of jumpers in basketball history. I have James Harden, who is one of the best shot makers in NBA history. That should be the benefit. You can't have this many possessions where it's like my turn to catch and survey. And so I go back to like the Ty Lue comments where it's like, James, stop trying to fit in, assert yourself. Quietly, I wonder if that's a subtweet to everyone in that room. To where it's like, all right, James about to start doing more things. Y'all better get yours where you can. And the where you can portion is some of the catch and shoot jumpers that keep getting passed up by some of these guys. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see it. Like, there's so much talent in the room. And you can see glimpses of it. Even with missed shots, you can see glimpses of, oh, this is what happens if they run this with force. And now the defense rotates. And now the kick is to Paul George in the corner. Or we run this double drag, and this is a switch, and it's like, oh, wait. They quietly cleared from the right corner to the left side. Now it's the empty side. Now you switched on to Kawhi. Oh, that's why you did that. And now Kawhi can operate with an entire side of the floor. You can see it. It's there. They just got to hammer it home more consistently than they are. And again, it's early, but it hasn't looked great so far.
No. I mean, I think that's about where you sum it up, or at least based on what my eyes are telling me. Ultimately, they're going to have to go out there and just play. They got to keep playing. It's better for you to have the adversity now than have to figure it out later. And they got to work to get out of the hesitation. You mentioned the catch and shoots. Paul George, he's got to get back to knowing exactly where his spots are. If you got the pull up, let it fly. If you got the drive, drive. Don't force it. Don't hesitate. Make a move. Let's go. Let's play. I think if they can find the comfort and balance between Paul George and James Harden, things will look different. And that's not like a it's not working type thing or a messy thing. I just think if you can get those two rolling, because of the ways you can use PG movement-wise and because of the ways you can use Harden pick and roll-wise, if they are both making quick decisions and playing comfortably, Kawhi's going to be Kawhi. He can get to his Kawhi stuff whenever he wants. And Russ is going to be Russ. I mean, Russell Westbrook is Russell Westbrook. He's a good player. He is just occasionally loud. The worst case scenario for this Clipper team is everyone is searching at the same time and no one is going for it. That's what they have to avoid. And the other thing I want to talk about, a lot of people might be mentioning it's your turn, my turn type offense. Transition is the only space I worry about that for this team. And transition has been the secret thing where it's like, hey, what is happening here? Especially in the Nets, Knicks, even the Grizzlies game to a degree, they get a stop. It does not turn into points at all. And it started to like boggle my mind. I was like, oh yeah, all four of these guys have kind of done that in transition to a degree. Oh, they're all on the same team. So now the James quick shot or the Kawhi quick shot or the PG quick shot or the Russ go attack. Oh, wait. So now we have a game where the defense has been pretty solid. And instead of being up 12-5, it's 7-8. For 4 minutes, And now you're not getting any easy baskets to take some of this weight off of having to figure it out in the half court all the time. And because everyone's kind of new together, you're not really flowing into much right now. It's not like it's automatic. Oh, Zubac is trailing. Let's hit him, go to a dribble handoff. No, it's, oh, I ain't got nothing. Well, bop.
What are we doing?
Bop. They got to get rid of that. But I mean, I'd ask this question to you and to the dunkers. Would you take the defense being solid right now and the offense being iffy, or the offense being great like many anticipated and the defense being what many anticipate?
I would probably take the good defense, which very quickly, noted the stats at the top, but like 6th in half court defense and 27th in transition offense is a very hard combination to pull off. So bravo, or I'm sorry, to the Los Angeles Clippers. That is very difficult. But with that being said, that also gives me a little bit of optimism. Because like that feels like, especially with transition, of all things, that feels very easily correctable with the transition offense. And as we talk about like the Clippers being like a bottom third offense right now during the Harden era, if they get the transition right, that automatically vaults them like 15th or 16th, which still isn't elite, but... okay, we can do that. Like, we've been seeing the Raptors for years. Like, all right, we ain't got much in the half court, but boy, will we force turnovers and or we will run in transition. Like, they were a borderline top 10 offense last year, despite being in the gutter in the half court. Sorry, Toronto. So, like, getting the transition offense together will help alleviate some of the half court things that they were going to have to work through anyway. It just feels so much worse because you have natural half court kinks plus James Harden working himself back plus transition offense sucks. Like, you can't have all three of those things at the same time. Like, that's just not a formula that's going to make you feel good, no matter who you're playing. And so the fact that the defense is sixth, naturally, they are switching a lot of stuff 1 through 4. I feel like Zubac has been fine. And then you could transition into PJ Tucker at the 5, and he's still working defensively. I don't think he's all defense level anymore. I think that's fair to say. Like, you could still do that. Like, they have... as I expected, like, they've tossed James Harden on 4s to start. Like, he's been okay. So, like, the fact that you have that foundation right now, I think you should feel pretty good about that. Now, again, transition offense has to be better. Transition defense also has to be better. And so, like I mentioned, the 6th and half court defense, 27th and transition offense, you also see kind of the inverse, where they're 24th and half court offense. And because the offensive process is blah and the shots aren't falling, now who you got getting back? Depending on where James Harden is, that can get tough. If Russ is your first guy back, he's absolutely going to try, but he's only 6'2 at the end of the day. And so if there isn't a real commitment to getting back, because this isn't going to be a team that crashes the offensive glass and gets a whole bunch of possession, extra possession. They have to be a group that ball is up, we're getting back. If we do get like a long bounce, we can just reset and get something in 14. They have to be, I'm tapping into like 2K brain now because that just annoys me. People just hover. But anyway, they have to be a team. Ball, as soon as the ball goes up, we are getting back to make sure we can build some kind of shell and we need to cut these early ones out. And if we're back, we can switch a whole bunch of stuff and we can force misses. And then hopefully you're able to flow out of things in a better way in transition. Quick question I had for you. Any thoughts on the rotation pattern so far? Because I think very early on it was, you know, you got the 4, and then it's like the 3 sitting is James Harden plus bench. And now it's kind of transitioned more into 2 stars plus bench and then 2 stars plus bench. How have you felt about the combinations or just the general rotation structure right now?
I'm intrigued by the switch, and I wonder if that's more of a reaction to the play of PG and Russell Westbrook and trying to give them more rhythm with things that the Clippers have done before, and kind of keeping them with the second unit to a degree. Because initially, I kind of understood James Harden plus the bench, because in theory, you give him more room to do pick and roll things. It gives them a hub and someone who can get 2 on the ball, and now the Clippers can attack. It's just how much of that did you really get, and how much did it cost your first unit as well? So I can understand saying, hey, James, you can play with Kawhi. PG, you and Russ do this. And now the bench can kind of do, quote unquote, the Clippers things, and those guys can hopefully feel more comfortable. We're getting to a point where we know what James is going to do in pick and roll. So y'all get going, and then hopefully we can mash this up together. So I'm keeping an eye on the rotation patterns, when they go small, when they go big. Because, I mean, to your point, their smaller lineups are just going to be smaller So it's going to be fun to watch some of those guys fly around, but you're going to end up with mismatches at times. So I think it's probably more to make sure that PG and Russ are in rhythm. And now once they come all back, because again, I think with James, you know what you're getting in pick and roll. With Kawhi, you know you can get it to him in a whole bunch of ways. So, hey, let's let y'all get right. Let's help you ignite the bench. The bench will lift y'all up. And then we can just kind of go.
Okay. Just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Did you have any closing Clipper thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff there. Just no results right now.
I got you. I feel like I've said quite a bit. I was starting to get into like rant territory with some of the stuff. So I think that's a nice sign to transition.
I told y'all we was going to do the thing and we did the thing. Hit the like button, subscribe, tell your friends to download this episode. What's good?
All that good stuff. What's good, he says. Very quickly on other teams I'm thinking about. Definitely not going to hang here too long since we just did a whole Clipper segment. Just keeping an eye on the Golden State Warriors, who, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, they're all on the losing streak right now. Steph's been insane. Everyone else, we shall see, at least among the big names. Uneven play from Klay, uneven from Draymond, uneven from Andrew Wiggins, for sure. I have some questions, keeping an eye on it. And then Orlando, defense remains elite. Have some questions about the offense. Like, I expect Paolo and Franz Wagner to start making more shots at a certain point, particularly from deep. But trying to find the balance between this is a group we can really defend with and surround those two guys with, and late in games, Paolo just has a guy in his lap all the time. Franz just has a guy in his lap all the time. Like, it doesn't hurt, doesn't help that, like, Gary Harris has missed some time. And so I'm just wondering, how much better does that get with the current personnel? And since, like, Orlando isn't in contention, it's not like they need to, let's consolidate and trade for a start. Like, they don't need to do that. But it is just keeping an eye on the guard room in particular and see what those combinations are going to be like, who's going to best fit alongside Franz and Paolo long-term and even in the short-term right now as they try to close out some of these games. But the defense remains elite with a capital E. And this still been strong even with Wendell Carter Jr. being out right now. And so once he gets back in, that should get even better. So I'm really enjoying watching Orlando, but just keeping an eye on the lineup combination. Did you have anything?
I was going to bounce off you with the Warriors. How do you handle size? How do you handle length? Can you handle Chris Paul becoming a switch? Can you make shots? I feel like a lot of their issues get fixed by shot making. And it's kind of a wild dynamic where they had that road run to start the year and then came back home and are looking like this. But I think they've shown enough to where they'll figure it out. Orlando, they're just another team that's learning how to win. So we'll see how they grow and develop in those late game situations. But yeah, I figured we'd just shout some players out.
Okay. Yeah, that works for me. Steve, who you want to shout out?
Anthony Edwards dropped 30 or more in four of his last seven games, averaging 30 in the month of November so far, shooting 50% from the field, Nikias, while also shooting 24% from three. And having Mike Conley tell him, hey, don't do that anymore, please. Could you stop shooting threes, please? He has a career high, 5.4 assists a game this year, so the playmaking's been there as well. I mean, he's you can get a basket just like anyone else can. Man took a step back right over Wimby, and then mid-free throw was trying to tell Draymond everything he wanted to hear. So, I mean, he's clearly on a mission. So salute to him. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, averaging 32.2 points on 56% shooting in the month of November. He is just getting to his spots right now. And the threat of the drive is there. It's always there. He's reading the defense a lot better, seeing help as more teams show help. But he's countering with the step back, with the pull up. And if he's just going to be in control like that, it's going to be tough on top of an OKC team that drives. Shout out to Marshawn Lynch. 55.1% on pull-up twos, according to the NBA tracking data. He was at 48.8 last year. So he's making a leap in the right area there. Quick salute to Caris LeVert, second in the league in scoring, off the bench, about 17 a game. Quick free throw for you before the segment. Which sixth man of the year campaign is going to bother you more, Tim Hardaway Jr. or Caris LeVert?
Oh, Lord. It is the official Score Points Award. That's crazy. It's funny. Like, we got the scoring title, and then we have the Get Points Award, which is just the Sixth Man of the Year Award. So I guess the answer is just going to be yes. But no, Karis has been hooping.
Yeah, he sure has. Cleveland needs it. Keep an eye on Cleveland. We might talk more about them next week. Stay tuned. And then I want to give a quick hat tip to LaMelo Ball. I think he has been doing a great job of playing with pace, playing with control, getting downhill against drop defense, taking what the defense gives him, and looking to finish. You know, if he doesn't have the finish, let me just snake under the basket to my little pull-up. I've just liked the tempo he's playing with. Charlotte hasn't quite gotten the results they want, but it feels like he's taking a step.
He's come along nicely. All right, well, going to get into my player shout-outs, which just end up turning into a Heat section as I ended up doing my notes. But we are going to start with Bam Adebayo, who right now, averaging career-high in points, 23.2 points per game, 53% on twos. He's technically shooting 50% from three, but he's one of two from three, so it don't really count. But 53% on twos, 80% from the line on nearly 8 free throw attempts. That is huge that he's mixing in the mid-range jumpers and the drives to get into the line to that degree. 10 boards, nearly 4 assists, a steal, a block and a half. I am having so much fun watching this dude play basketball. The defensive responsibility remains insane for him. He still has to switch all over the place. He's playing even more drop than he has in years prior, and he's been elite at it with a capital E. And you think about the hub work that he does offensively as a handoff guy, post splits, et cetera. He can attack on his own, post up and ISO usage is up. He's done that efficiently. Again, he's getting to the free throw line. But I need to go back to the defense. It feels weird to say, I don't know if people really recognize how good at defense Bam is.
They don't.
But he is so good. The fact that he does not have an all-defensive first team to his name yet is wild. Some quick numbers I'll throw out there. 94 players to this point, as we record on a Monday afternoon, 94 players have defended at least 20 isolations. Bam is first in points per possession allowed. 42 players have defended at least 40 shots at the rim this year. Bam is third in field goal percentage allowed. Behind, you want to chuckle real quick?
Yeah.
The two players ahead of Bam in field goal percentage allowed at the rim, Walker Kessler and Rudy Gobert.
That's funny.
Heck of a trade, huh? Anyway. And then you zoom out, he's one of 4 players averaging 20 and 10. He's the only guy above that group averaging over a steal and a block per game. 47% on shots in the short mid-range area per cleaning the glass, 41% on long mid-range shots. That's the 75th percentile among bigs. He's doing everything. And then you think about the gauntlet. I don't want to say gauntlet, but you think about who he's faced off with during this win streak. First, overall in the win streak, he's averaging 24, 12, and 5. Just KG numbers casually. But then you think about who he's faced in the last 4. The Lakers with Anthony Davis, the Grizzlies with Jaren, Atlanta with the Clint Onyeka combo, San Antonio with Wimby. 26, 15, 5, 2, and 2 in those games. He's been so insane. Like, I hate the chuckle, but he has just been wildly good on both ends of the floor. And like, if we didn't exist in a world where like Luka exists and Jokic exists, you throw the big gaudy numbers and whatever. Like, he's literally playing at an all-NBA slash like 4-6 rated MVP candidate case right now. Like, that's how good Bam has been when you think about both ends of the floor. Box score numbers are there. Advanced numbers are there. He's been insane.
I want to piggyback on what you said. I didn't know if you were done or not, but I found a stat that you might enjoy and the dunkers might enjoy. Now, one, I've liked that Bam is taking the shot. Free throws are great, but he is taking the shot. You want to give me the space, I'm going to take the shot. Post up, gone. The timing between, hey, I'm a hub, and, oh, I'm looking to shoot, starting to blur that a little bit. That's fantastic. So, shout out to my guy, Cooper Moorhead. Over the last 4 games, Bam Adebayo has averaged 25.5 points on 53.7% shooting, 14.5 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 2 steals, and 1.8 blocks. The only other players in NBA history to do that over 4 games since 1973, Hakeem did it twice, Larry Bird did it twice, Giannis did it twice, Kareem 13 times.
Jesus.
Yeah, he's cooking.
He is cooking indeed. And then quickly with his teammate, Duncan Robinson, 13 points per game, 62% on twos. Quiet for him start behind the arc, 36% on 7 attempts. That's been fun. Career high 2.2 assists. Duncan Robinson is driving the basketball. Now, I'm sure if you're on Twitter, you have seen at some point him hitting Victor Wembanyama with the Smitty, which yeah, I'm sure everyone had down the Mingo cards. But like, I even go to the Washington game. Tyler Hero, before he gets hurt, Tyler Hero brings it up. Duncan Robinson screens for him. He then takes a screen from the left side of the floor from Thomas Bryant. Poor Bilal Coulibaly's trying to chase him. He can't do it. Duncan pumps. He drives. It flows into a pick and roll with Thomas Bryant. This man hits Gallo with the smoothest pass fake into a layup I've seen in like 3 weeks. I'm like, wait a minute. What kind of sauce is this Duncan Robinson? And I say this as someone who watches an ungodly amount of Heat games, admittedly. But even with the pure driving numbers, 5.4 drives per game this year, which isn't, you know, it's not a lot. But for him, wild career high. You know where he was at last year?
I do not.
2.2. You know where he was the year before that? 1.7. He has darn near tripled his drives per game in a 2 year span and has been pretty darn effective. So I wanted to give him the quick shout out right there. Kata Bates' job. Glad he's firmly in the rotation. The Suns have won his minutes since entering the rotation over the last 6 games. So I just wanted to give him the quick shout out. Jalen Suggs. I already talked a little bit about Orlando, but he's been good. 0.84 points per possession allowed when he defends a pick and roll this year. Some guys that he is ahead of, and he's one of the high volume guys. This isn't he's defended 7, has a good number. The number of guys he's ahead of right now: Mikal Bridges, OG Anunoby, Jaden McDaniels, Derek White, Drew Holiday, Dennis Smith Jr. Those are just some of the names that Jalen Suggs is ahead of. Nasty screen navigator. 4th in steals right now, 2.1 per game. He's top 5 in defensive loose balls recovered. He's tied with Chris Paul, so that's funny, with 8. Asar Thompson, Russell Westbrook, Tyrese Maxey all have 9. So he's like right there at the top of the loose balls recovered. I think he's like top 15 in deflections. He's just been all over the place. The offense coming along, so that's cool. While we're Detroit adjacent, Killian Hayes, just want to quickly note that he's averaging 15, 4, and 6, and he's shooting 39% from 3 over his last 6 games. That's all I'm going to say. I'm going to lend it right there. Steve, do you have free throws?
I sure do. Do you?
I do.
All right. You want me to go first?
I can go first. I'm sure you're going to have some heavy hitters.
Okay.
All right. Do you think Draymond's more upset with Anthony Edwards or Donovan Mitchell?
I would say Donovan Mitchell. I'm going to go Donovan Mitchell. I don't think he'd like that.
He didn't like those antics. Okay. Speaking of which, Anthony Edwards or Donovan Mitchell?
Ooh, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. Donovan's been great. Anthony Edwards has been very good as well. Ooh, that's a very tough question to answer right now. I'm going to go Donovan by like this much right now.
Okay.
Just right this second.
That's fair. Bam Adebayo or Anthony Davis?
You know, Bam is tough.
Gosh darn it. All right. whose fan base is more fed up right now, Chicago or New Orleans?
New Orleans. New Orleans by a country mile. I think there's more apathy in Chicago. New Orleans, they are just upset. And then Zion said a thing, and now they're even more upset. And now Brandon Ingram taking pull-ups, even though that's what he does, and they're even more upset. They're just big mad.
Related, would you say that a 17 dribble, no pass possession is bad?
No.
Okay. all right, which team figures out switches first, Orlando or Minnesota?
Oh, well, I think it's Minnesota by default because of their personnel. My issue with Minnesota is, can we please stop letting point guards switch on the car, Anthony Towns? Like, just can we stop? Like, in the last week, I've seen Peyton Pritchard and Chris Paul do it. Can we not do that?
Yeah, not super ideal. Do you know who leads the NBA in charges drawn so far?
No.
Or I guess I should say taken, but yeah. It is Jalen Brunson with 9.
Salute to that man.
This is where So I'm not going to make like the all defense case that I was for Mitchell Robinson, but Jalen Brunson has been working on defense all year long, and I think he deserves a hat too.
Okay.
Who needs more help, Steph Curry or Cade Cunningham?
Right this second, I would say Steph, because he is cooking at a high level. and just needs a couple more shots to go down around him.
Got you. Rank these forwards for me this year. Andrew Wiggins, DeAndre Hunter, Harrison Barnes.
Ooh, so far, Barnes, Hunter, Wiggins.
Okay, cool. So far this season, Brandon Ingram or RJ Barrett?
You know what's very funny? I have that written down for you.
You do a podcast long enough with somebody. That's crazy.
I'll still take B.I. No offense to RJ. Okay. Shooting the ball well. I'll still take B.I. Okay.
Got you. Two more for you. Danny Avdia or Austin Reeves?
What's the difference?
Wow. Okay. That's all right. Last question I have for you. What's your favorite halftime at right now?
Well, redacted. Let's paint it up.
Okay. It's awful. All right, that's all I got for you.
Actually, no, never mind. We'll talk about it afterwards. Tyrese Halliburton said a lot of his hoop knowledge came from 2K. Does that secure him a cover spot?
It better. He's like in the, like, duh, he's in the game because he's a player, but like he's also like part of the My Career cutscenes. And like, if this isn't the natural progression for that guy to be a 2K cover athlete, I don't know what is.
All righty. More surprising that Damian Lillard, Trae Young, and Keegan Murray are all shooting sub 30% from three, or that Duncan Robinson is driving the basketball and finishing.
More surprising is probably the former.
Okay. Donovan Mitchell or Tyrese Maxey?
Wow. It's going to be Mitchell for me, but the fact that Tyrese Maxey is in the conversation is a testament to how good he's been.
Okay. Tyrese Maxey or Tyrese Halliburton?
It's going to be Tyrese Halliburton, but the fact that Tyrese Maxey is in this conversation is a testament to how good he's been this year.
Tyrese Maxey or Anthony Edwards?
It's going to be Anthony Edwards, but the fact that Tyrese Maxey is in this conversation is a testament to how good he's been.
Tyrese Maxey or Trae Young?
Oh, Lord. You know, the efficiency is not great for Trae. It's going to be Trae Young, okay. But the fact that he's in this conversation is a testament to how good Tyrese Maxey has been this year.
Man, way to stick with me, folks. Tyrese Maxey or Jaylen Brown?
Oh, wow. Ooh, this one might be Tyrese. Wait a minute. Ooh, this might be Tyrese. He's a whole lot of all-stars, too. Yeah. But yeah, this might be Tyrese.
There you go. That's about what I thought. I can always depend on that being the system changer. LaMelo Ball or Jalen Brunson?
Probably Jalen still.
Okay. Lauri Markkanen or Scottie Barnes?
That's a good one. Actually, if we're getting this deep from...
We got him.
Gosh darn it. Because I think about how Laurie is so freaking good. And like Scottie's also good. And they're good in different ways. They're both first on. Like Scottie's like a super plus defender now. Mm-hmm. And Laurie's also solid.
Make a pick.
I'm trying, man. Because the shots ain't falling for Scottie like that no more. But the playmaking still... I'm going to go Laurie.
You don't feel good about it. I'm going to replace mine. Jeremy Grant or Brandon Ingram?
Oh, just so far this year, it's probably Jeremy. Oh, wow.
Okay.
Shout out to our guy, Jeremy.
All right. Dennis Schroeder or Jordan Clarkson?
Schroeder for me.
All right.
This is already terrifying. Okay.
Oh no, man.
If you laughing before the free throw.
Julius Randle or Klay Thompson?
Oh. Oh boy.
Yeah, that's why I was laughing. I knew I was gonna put you in a headlock, buddy. Yeah, bud.
Oh God, that's disgusting. Cause here's the thing, right? Oh. So how much are you giving to Julius playmaking and the inherent value of the drives versus Clay ain't really. Oh Lord. Clay, I guess. I don't feel great about either of those options.
Perfect. So based on your earlier remarks in the pod, what's more important or a better part of a balanced breakfast for you? Dylan Brooks' thoughts are eggs.
No way. Would you say you love eggs?
The incredible edible egg, man.
That is awful. Do you have any more free throws?
Nope, hit the horns.
Oh my goodness. I love that like 98% of people are going to have no idea what that last question is about.
It's okay.
That is 4D Dunkers and us, I guess. Anyway, thank you for listening to or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Again, first episode of the week is going to be on YouTube every Tuesday. Record on Monday afternoon, so we miss the Monday night slate. But on Thursdays, we do have the audio version of the pod. We go twice a week. So that's where you can find us. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can check us out. Subscribe to JJ Redick's YouTube channel if you haven't already. You can follow me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. If you have a League Pass subscription, you can watch basketball with us live. Not only can you watch basketball with us live, we're also breaking stuff down during commercial breaks. Steve has been freaking excellent in breaking down like end of game plays and why they did or didn't work. So if that's the kind of thing that appeals to you, come rock with us. We also have like some random like TikTok Tuesdays, TikTok Fridays, where we just let our hair down. We laugh at some stuff, have some conversations. It's obviously a basketball room, but it is a very inclusive community. So come hang with us. We talk life stuff too. The link to the room should be hyperlinked in your podcast description. If you're listening to this, if you're watching it, it's going to be in the podcast description. Just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. And if it's not hyperlinked for the audio listeners, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all on Thursday.
Hey, Nikias, great show. Why did that man tell that chair, didn't I tell you?